making those things my top three priorities allow everything else in life to be taken care of a little more easily.
Welcome back to Tech Moms, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everybody, to the Tech Less podcast. Today, we have a friend, Justin Jackson, on, and he is a Salesforce consultant with 8 years in the SaaS industry. Originally from Indiana and a Boilermaker at heart,
That's
he
right.
set down roots in South Louisiana with his wife, dog, and two cats, where he spent his free time with family, investing in physical and mental health, and attempting to be of service to others.
That's right.
Welcome. I have to know, what is a Boilermaker?
Gosh. Well, I wasn't prepared for that one, but I'd like to think less of the physical object of being a ginormous train and more of sort of a mindset that I feel like the university instilled in me when I was there. And, really it's someone who takes pride in the work that they do. They work hard and they try to be helpful to others.
Is that the mascot from
Yeah.
school?
Yeah.
It
There's
is.
a,
Okay.
there's a, the guy that actually like wears a mascot costume is called Purdue Pete, and he's got this big obnoxious head, wears a hat, he's got a hammer that he carries around. It's fun. They have like all these requirements of like body composition to be able to like qualify to be Purdue Pete too. It's intense.
Goodness. Oh, I like your interpretation better.
Appreciate that.
Justin, you have over 8 years in the tech industry, most of which is in the Salesforce ecosystem. As we know, being in tech can be really difficult. It's an industry that's constantly thinking about how we can optimize, how we can be more productive, this thought of like work harder, work harder, work harder, produce, produce, produce. With that said, what has your experience been? One, being in the tech industry and then managing, your own work-life balance with this mindset.
It's a great question, a timely question. I would say my experience has been not managing it up to this point. Up until about the last year, I would say I have, really overworked myself to the point where I had to come to this realization that, I needed to prioritize some other things in life if I was going to be healthy, if I was going to be happy. And so maybe everybody's not as extreme as me. Maybe you can heed advice from others and not have to learn stuff the hard way. I would say for most of my career, I've prioritized work over everything else. And so it's gotten to a point, where I've had to start to learn how to do that over the last year, which has been a journey in and of itself. And it's brought a lot of happiness. It's brought a lot of self-awareness about who I am and what I need in life to be happy, to be able to be successful, to be able to be helpful to other people. So, up to this point, that's kind of what's been going on. But the last year has been amazing, and I'm happy to share more about that if you have questions.
I mean, I think that this idea, this reality that a lot of us lead and find ourselves in is putting work at the forefront of who we are. And pursuing work achievements or professional accomplishments at all costs. I definitely would love to hear more about your story. You mentioned, up until maybe the last year, that's been your core focus. How did you manage that? What did that look like? What lessons have you learned?
Yeah, I've spent some time doing, a little bit of mental health counseling with a counselor and doing some psychoanalysis and, other practices like prayer and meditation and practicing mindfulness, going to the gym. But, to get to the point of being willing to do all those things, I battered myself throughout my career putting work first. And, through a lot of the self-reflection I've done over the last year, I think a lot of that, and I think this may be, what other people do is, the whole idea of imposter syndrome. Understanding myself, that was always a huge thing that impacted me. I didn't really think I deserved to make it into college when I did. And so I felt out of place there, when I was back in college. All of my best friends are either engineers or doctors, and so I felt inadequate always being surrounded by them, and always felt like lesser than, maybe from an intelligence standpoint. And then I honestly landed in the software energy industry just by chance. It was sort of luck of the draw, because my degree's in psychology, and I landed in a customer success role at a CRM company, my first job out. And so I'm around all of these software engineers who are highly skilled technical people. And so I always felt this sense of inadequacy and inability to be able to keep up on the intelligence or technical standpoint. And so my solution was to overwork myself. If I can just put in the hours, if I can work harder, I can make up for that insufficiency. And today I understand that that is not true. I understand that as people's experiences have given them the ability to become more technical or skilled in certain areas, and that's been how their experience has gone in life. It doesn't necessarily make them better than or anything like that, but in my mind, that's how I interpreted it. And so my solution was to overwork myself. So, and to the point to where I had, I was sort of forced to like reassess my life, how I was living, and try to do some self-searching and figure out how do I do this differently so that it's sustainable, that I can be healthy, that I can be of true use and helpfulness to other people.
There's so much there. There's so much there with that comparison of what I have to offer, what are my natural abilities, and comparing with other people. And I know we talked a little bit about this before this interview, of kind of seeing now, like, okay, not everybody is meant to be technical. That doesn't need to be the golden standard.
Right.
That's something that I for sure have fluctuated back and forth on, of comparing myself. You know, I'm more of a functional communication soft skills, like skills that traditionally aren't viewed as valuable necessarily as like being able to code or being able to program, do all those things. So I think not just me, but I think a lot of people can probably relate
Yeah.
to their journey with that. I'm curious, when you say you were forced to reevaluate, can you tell us, like, was that a particular moment? Like, what was that experience where you took a step back to really look at, you know, where your priorities were?
Yeah. So everybody's, well, not everybody. I don't want to make assumptions. Sorry. There is this problem in the tech industry of layoffs, and I don't say this sarcastically. I say it truthfully. I see it. I have the privilege of having been laid off twice in my career already. The first time it happened, I was, I was 5 months into my professional career. And at that point in time, I had no idea how to handle something like that. And so that didn't go well. Most recently, about a year ago, I was laid off again as well. And this is sort of that moment where I was sort of forced into having to do some reassessing and finding out how do I do this sustainably. And at the time, I was really unhappy and kind of depressed and not managing the work-life balance well. I was in a new role that I felt a lot of imposter syndrome. It was something that I think I maybe put on a pedestal in my mind, the role. I was product manager role, and so I was learning a lot of new things in that role. I got a new manager, 6 months into that, and we had a lot of disagreements about how we should be managing the product. And on top of that, feeling forced to do and lead the product in a direction I didn't believe in, and then also having to justify that to a development team. And so you're trying to convince people of something that you don't believe in. And so on top of all that, as we discussed, I overworked myself. And so a lot of my identity was in my work. And so if my work is not good, if I'm not happy at work, it feels like the rest of my life is crashing down. And so when I was laid off, I had to sort of look at the things that I was doing to figure out how to really live my life again and do it in a way that's gonna bring me happiness and be sustainable. And so, that was scary, having to be honest with myself about who I am and what my character defects are and how do I change my life for the better. I don't know how much detail you want me to go in about that, but I mean, there were ways that I was, choosing to self-medicate that just that was making the problem worse.
I can relate to that. I remember there was a time in my life where I would wake up, I get ready, I go to work. Now, this is when I went into an office. I would get off of work. It was about a 20-minute commute, so I would call this restaurant on the beach here, Florida. We love
Love
Florida.
that.
And probably 3 or 4 nights out of the five, I would pick up like chicken wings, seasoned fries, and like 4 or 5 ranches. And I would go home and put on the Netflix and just eat. Didn't matter if I was hungry. Didn't matter if I was full. And I just would binge watch Netflix until 1, 2 a.m. And I would get up the next day and I would do it again. And I'm like getting chills because it's been a long time since I've talked about that. And I had no idea at the time that I was unhappy. No idea. It seemed normal to me. I didn't really know what I was missing. I lived a block from the beach and I near like never went walking on the beach, never went to see the sunset or the sunrise.
It's we can really start to lie to ourselves about the truth of our situations. That, at least that's what I did, was I mean, thinking that this life of constantly seeking some sort of relief, or diving into Netflix is it's gonna take your brain off of everything else in life and give you a rest from that. But is it true rest? Is it truly energizing you and making you better? And it's almost like you're just floating through life. You're not living life. You're just floating through it, trying to escape when you can into food, alcohol, or Netflix, or whatever you can find that's going to give you some sort of short-term relief, but doesn't actually help in the long term.
Escapism its finest.
For the longest time, I I had the thought that maybe like alcohol consumption was a problem for me, but I, you know, I would always use other people as an example to justify why I wasn't that bad. Like I'd find someone to be like, oh, that person is worse than me. It's not so bad. And you know, or find reasons to justify why I'm gonna do it. It's like, well, you know, it's got this event this weekend, you know, where the UFC fights are on, or I'm grilling out for the family. It's like I've got to gotta have some drinks, right? Until the point where it's like, well, I'm not sleeping well at night. Well, maybe I'll have a few drinks to be able to sleep well. And it's like, okay, we're starting to get to the territory of like, is that a real, like, is that a justifiable real reason to be able to do that? Or are we just making up our own reasons and lying to ourselves about it being okay?
Yeah, and I think that extends to any substance or any escape we have, whether society deems it as unhealthy or healthy, because there's ways to make, what society might deem as healthy activities, there's ways to have that as a crutch, as a coping mechanism for not taking a look at what's going on the inside. So thank you for sharing like your own coping, and I know we all have our own ways that we deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for what I've identified, like from my experience, is that it's really easy to isolate. And when I isolate, I don't really have anybody else that's, you know, given me sound advice, you know, just kind of listening to myself. And, you know, as I said at the beginning of this, I can lie to myself and I can justify some stuff to myself. And it's not a great place to be when you're constantly lying to yourself about the state of your mental health, about the state of your life.
Yeah, I've been there. And I still it's an ongoing challenge for me. Like just this morning, I lied to myself about wanting the iced coffee, didn't want the iced coffee. It's like I told myself, we're not getting the iced coffee out today. And I know that it probably seems like such a trivial example, but for me,
Nope.
that is the conversation for me is, am I going to do the thing that I really, really want, that somewhere in me, 5-year-old me or 15-year-old me really
Yes.
wants, but is
Yes.
actually not going to
Oh my
help me
gosh.
in the long run? Or do I put on my April Rust? I'm 31 years old. I know that I will survive if I don't get the iced coffee this
Yeah.
morning. I have a free coffee here. Like,
It's not trivial. It's such a real example. And we lie to ourselves every single day about small stuff like that. And it's so true. We don't even notice it when it's happening. But you touched on something that like I've really tried to zero in on over the last year of like this idea of like wanting something, and it can be as trivial as a coffee, but having to pause in this in the moment and think like, I shouldn't really get everything that I want. And when I'm unhealthy, that's what I'm doing, is giving myself everything that I want. I'm giving in to every little impulse and desire that comes through my mind. And you know, it happened this week. I'm sitting on the couch watching the Netflix show with my wife and my mom, and you know, we watched an episode, and I'm, you know, I've got this exam come up that I'm studying for. It's tomorrow, and I'm like, in the moment, I had that feeling. I was like, oh man, it's really, really nice on this warm couch, watching this show, spending time with my family, right? And I'd love to just watch another episode. But in the moment, I was like, no, like that impulse of trying to keep me from achieving and doing the things to make me a better version of myself. And so I got up off the couch, I went into my office, and I started studying. And you know what? An extra hour may or may not make a difference in whether or not I pass that exam, but it does make a difference in the practice of giving in to every impulse that comes through my mind. And the more that I fight against that impulse, the stronger I get at fighting it the next time.
Yeah, it's that practice. And I think something I've had to learn, and I'm still learning. I don't know if there's ever a I'm on the other side of this conundrum we find ourselves in,
Absolutely.
but what I'm gonna say, so I preface that for what I'm about to say is I also think it would have been just fine had you made a conscious decision that, you know what, an hour of studying really isn't actually going to get me any closer. And I mean, we can debate Netflix has quality time all day long, but let's just say that we were to agree that it was quality time with your family and that was something that was meaningful for you. Just to go through, I think it's that practice of going through that conscious decision of like, what feels right to me? What feels like an impulse? What's my intuition telling me? And practicing following that, whether it makes sense in your mind or not, whether it makes sense logically or not. Because it's like, you know, because then I feel like sometimes we go to the other end of that spectrum with not giving in to impulse, not giving in to impulse. And then we don't let ourselves rest and we don't let ourselves indulge every once in a while in ways that aren't going to completely throw us off, like our routine. And so that's something that I'm constantly thinking about. It's like, okay, can I like schedule one day? Well, we're going to get the iced coffee on this day. And it's going to be a treat. It's going to be a reward. It's not going to be this procrastination or escapism or I cope sometimes with mindless spending. So like that's a thing for me is this iced coffee. It's not about the coffee. It's about like I get a dopamine hit when I, you know, when I spend that money first thing in the morning, which sounds insane, but that's my reality.
You have me. I mean, it's a good, you bring up a great point. I'm sitting here questioning myself now as to whether I went the right way in that situation, you know? And it brings to the forefront that balance is important for everything in life, everything in moderation. I can, choose to study every single opportunity that I have. But is that what's going to be good for me in the long run? Is that going to be sustainable? Is that going to make me happy? And sure, if I pass the exam, I'll get that dopamine hit. But it is truly about balance in everything, because the overindulgence in anything is really where we start to find ourselves and getting in trouble.
Oh, goodness. I'm like, let's just all take a deep breath. Like,
Yeah.
shake out the energies because this
Yeah, I
stuff
love
is so real, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm in a vacuum. I don't hear enough
You're not.
people talking about these things on the interwebs and especially on LinkedIn and in business. And it's like, but like we're all human. Are we still not all human?
Yeah,
We should be able to
absolutely.
talk about these things.
You're not in a vacuum, and if you are, I guess I'm there with you. But I think there are plenty of people out there that have similar experiences, and maybe they're currently at the point where they're still lying to themselves about the real state of life, or maybe they're ignoring that little voice in their head that's saying, this is not right. Or maybe this resonates with them, or maybe they're a robot and they're just they don't think about this type of stuff because it's constantly, I've met people like that where it's like nothing seems to faze them. I've had a boss like this where, things that seems to make everybody else disgruntled, he's just like, yeah, shrug it off, move on. I'm like, that is a And you know what? I think the people that are like that have reached the point of like self-actualization and this work-life balance that the rest of us are still trying to figure out. And it's like they should give us the little secret antidote that they are, you know, just hoarding from the rest of us.
Give us a secret.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know. There is no silver bullet, right? I mean,
yeah.
I wish. I wish. But there are things that we can do and we can learn and we can share. And I'd love to hear from you. What have those things been for you? That, you know, you mentioned a turning point. You mentioned taking a look at your priorities. Can you tell me more about
Yeah.
that process and whether it's been habits or mindset work or whatever it's been? I'd love to hear what's been working for you.
Yeah, I had to really take a look at my priorities and what, you know, setting priorities is one thing and taking action on them is a different one. And so I had to simplify by setting what are my top priorities, and then after I take care of those things, I can really start to like work on the other stuff. And so I keep it to three, and you know, all these things are a higher priority than my relationship with my wife. They're higher priority than my work, because if I don't do these things right, the rest of my life will not be in order. And so I had to start to prioritize my sobriety. So, you know, I've got over 10 months sober. I cut out alcohol completely. I've never slept better in my life. So for people that are thinking like, oh, shit, you know, I'm thinking about quitting, do it. I promise you, you will never get, I mean, the first month, your body's still going to be adjusting, but after a few months, you know, 6 months in or something like that, you will sleep so good at night. Andrew Huberman, I don't know if you follow him, April, but he's a biologist by trade, and he's got a podcast called the Huberman Podcast, and he shares all kinds of stuff. Just having one drink a week can have a significant impact on the quality of your sleep. You might be able to fall asleep every night, but the quality, the rest, the regeneration of your body doesn't happen very well, even just having one drink a week. So priority one was sobriety. Priority two for me was spiritual, having a relationship with God. And then priority number three is just overall health in life. So, you know, that's going to the gym, that's keeping track of what I eat. That can look a lot different sometimes, just, you know, taking my dog for a longer walk than usual, like being in nature, getting sunlight. But making those things my top three priorities allow everything else in life to be taken care of a little more easily.
So you've got your priorities. And I love what you said about setting priorities and taking action are two very different things. And while there's no silver bullet, is there maybe a little golden nugget you can share of, you know, one thing that someone listening that says, oh, I want that. That's me. But this just feels way too overwhelming to bite off all at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
What might be one action that you would suggest?
Ask for help. It's as simple as that. If you're willing to go searching for it, I imagine you'll be able to find help. And that was something that I could not do. I had this mindset that every problem was my burden to bear, whether at work, at home, personal life, whether we're friends, April, and you have problems. I took those on personally as my own. And other people's problems are not my problems. I had to accept that too. But I would say the simple nugget is ask for help.
I wish everyone could see me. I'm giving myself a hug.
I'm reaching out through the camera for a hug as well.
Yay. Oh my gosh. It's so true. It's so true. I'm just letting all of that sink in because it's some heavy topics that we're navigating through. And
yeah.
I'm going back to a time like when I asked for help and it was really scary. I'm just thinking about like, okay, what might be helpful for someone who knows that they need help, but like getting over that fear of asking for it.
Yeah, I mean, the inability or unwillingness to ask for help is pretty telling about some other things, right, that are going on internally. Like just if someone can't ask someone for help, for me that meant that I had this sort of internal egoism that I could solve every problem. And you know, I've got a degree in psychology, right? I can solve my own mental health, right? And for me, it was egoism. And I think I was a little afraid of being vulnerable and admitting, because that was part of my identity, was solving problems, and you know, I can work hard, muscle my way through it, right? But it was sort of opening up my identity and being vulnerable, that maybe I can't fix this problem, and admitting that was scary for me.
Me too. Me too. I think particularly when, I mean, I don't mean particularly when. It can be scary for anybody, no matter the circumstance. For me, admitting that I wanted help and I needed help when I had a stable job that was high paying, I had just bought a house, I had a lot of things that I was taught, like, they're going to make you happy, you're going to be successful, you're going to feel fulfilled, you're going to feel all the things. And I remember waking up one morning and I just was like, I thought life was supposed to be more beautiful than this. Like, how do I feel this way when I have all the things, but I didn't have any of the love inside me? Like, there was no love. I was a dried up flower. And it was really scary. It was scary to admit that what I had bought into almost my whole life wasn't serving me.
Yeah.
That I was wrong. Ooh, yikes. I hate to be wrong. Yikes. I hate to be wrong. Talk about character flaws. I hate to be wrong. And so asking for help was admitting
a little bit of humble pie.
It was a lot of humble pie. It was a lot of humble pie. And it was so scary.
But I bet being on the other side of it, you would say that it's probably one of the better things that has happened to you.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, I still feel like I'm like in the thick of things. I don't know for me if there is ever going to be like on the other side. And that's something that I talk at lengths about with my therapist. Like, it's cyclical. And I like to think, like, something that she shares with me is like every cycle, like, we grow and like then we default back, like we go back to our default and then we grow and our default gets a little bit improved and like then we go, like we grow and then we fall a little bit, we fall back down to this default, but like every phase of that, our default is expanding and our default of like those impulses and the habits and the mindsets and all these things that for so long we let go unchecked, that starts to grow in a positive direction. But that I don't know for me if there's ever going to be another side. And I'm okay with that. Like, I don't like it, but I've accepted that I am not on a linear progression that is shooting up exponentially into the stars.
Which is unrealistic, right?
Yes. It'd be nice, but it's not going to
Yeah,
happen.
but I think you bring a real perspective to that, because you help people understand that their expectation shouldn't be that if you do X, Y, and Z, your life is going to be good for the rest of life. You solve the problem, because that's just not real, right? Like hardships happen, we regress, we have to reassess, and just like you and your therapist were talking about, like the baseline or that regression gets a little bit less bad every time as we continue to work on ourselves.
Such good stuff. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
coming on.
No,
Ay-ay-ay.
thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
So there's something I like to do. I took this from a podcast that I love, called the One Person Business, I think is what it's called. From Joe Rando and Carly Reese. I'm obsessed with that podcast because I just think it's so helpful for business, whether you're an individual contributor or whether like you own your own business. It's just, anyway, I digress. I like to give them credit though, where credit's due. They ask at the end of every podcast if you have a favorite quote. And I know you mentioned that you don't really, but I'd still love to hear what you might come up with.
Yeah. It kind of goes in line with the setting priorities and taking action on them are different things. It's the quote but from Henry Ford, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. And it's a little personal to me. I think that I always think of that one as a default. Because of the imposter syndrome that I mentioned earlier, it helps me to reframe tasks in my mind in such a way that if I think I'm going to fail, I'm probably going to fail. And it's like pilots, they tell them not to focus on the object that they don't want to hit, right? You haven't heard that, maybe?
No, but it's so true.
Yeah,
It's
if
like
you
telling kids
focus.
not to do something and then gonna
Yeah, exactly.
it.
Like, don't press the big red button. Well, now I really want to press it.
Yeah. So true. Well, is there anything else, or any final thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would just say that, yeah, if this resonates with anybody, if you have questions or have that little voice in the back of your head, should you ask for help, you probably should. I'm an open book. So, and I personally believe that my purpose in life is to make myself to of maximum service to God and the people about me. And so helping other people is where I think I find most joy and happiness in life. And so if I can help in any way, please reach out to me. I've got a website, jackofalltradesolutions.com, and then I'm on X and Instagram as Real Justin Jacks. That's JAX.
Oh, I like
So,
that. And you're on
um, just
LinkedIn too. Can
on LinkedIn
people
as well. It's Real
get
Justin
connected
Jacks
with
as well.
you there? Okay.
That's right. And just, yeah, happy to help in any way.
Well, thank you, Justin. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you for having me.